Welcome to Disorderly Dogs, the podcast for dog guardians. If you find yourself in precarious predicaments with your dog, this podcast is for you. I'm a certified professional dog trainer, and I take my 10 years of training experience and I share easy to implement dog training advice with an emphasis on kindness and compassion. Welcome. I'm so excited to share more. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Disorderly Dogs, the podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a pretty amazing topic. We're going to talk about muzzles. And I have my local muzzle maker, muzzle extraordinaire advisor with me today. So, Amy, do you want to introduce yourself to all of the listeners?
Sure. I am Amy Craven. I'm a Karen Pryor Academy certified training partner and have been since 2010. Yeah, so I've been training dogs for quite some time. And this is kind of going to bring us into some other stuff. But I got into making muzzles because the vast majority of my dogs were behavior clients. And I could not get them to advance in their training because I couldn't get them to wear their muzzles. And I couldn't get them to purchase muzzles. And I did not feel comfortable, you know, pushing these aggressive dogs or potentially dangerous dogs into situations where we thought that they were ready for it, but we needed to have that extra backup just in case, you know, something didn't go quite as planned. As you know, sometimes that happens.
Yes. Yep. Okay. So Amy, I want to back up a couple of steps here. So one, tell everyone about your dogs, because I feel like our dogs are really like the reason we keep doing all the things we do. So we need to give them a shout out.
Absolutely. So my original dog, the OG, was Evie Lynn, and she was a husky mix that I got 2008. And she was awesome. She taught me so much. And she was an amazing dog. And she was dog selective and taught me that not all dogs are like big snuggle bugs and all sorts of stuff. So I learned a lot about behavior from her. And we did agility together and we did all sorts of dog sports. But yeah, so she taught me a lot about dog training and really got me into dog training and convinced me to leave my nursing career to become a dog trainer. And then after Evie, while I still had Evie passed away in 2021, I think. But I got this sweet Australian Shepherd, and she was going to be my agility awesomeness, and she still is. We do agility together, and she's amazing and super friendly, and just always game to do anything. And then last year, I had a litter of puppies from Miss Moya and ended up keeping two of them, which I don't recommend. puppies are a lot of work, and keeping two of them and litter mates and making sure that they grow up balanced is extra work. But they have been a blast. So I now have two 11-month-old puppies, Haiku, which technically belongs to my partner, Noah. And she is just a little rock star. She goes to everything with him. And puts up with so much. And my Puck is my little 11-month-old boy, and he is not so little. He's massive, and he is just hilarious, absolutely hilarious. He makes everybody laugh every day, and he has so many big feelings, and just mostly about wanting to be close to everybody else. But yeah, he's amazing.
Oh my God. I love all the new generations of dogs we get to bring into our lives. And just like, it's such a riot getting to know them and support these new, like, silly teenage dogs.
Yep. The teenage, oh my gosh. I totally forgot about the teenage stage.
Right? You're like, oh yeah, the teenage phase is real. Like, you know it is, and you support your clients, but then you live it. You're like, oh, here we are.
Yep. This too shall pass. I promise.
Oh my God. Okay. So Amy, I want to talk about something, because I think that you've been at this a little bit longer than me, but you know, we've been training for, you know, over a decade here.
Yeah.
Because I feel like from my perspective, like I knew about muzzles and muzzle training when I first got started, but I don't feel like it was something that like, I don't know, we reached for as soon or as quickly, right? Like, has that been your experience in your career too?
Yeah, absolutely. So like starting out, I started out at the Humane Society of Boulder Valley, and I mean, all of our dogs that went to our Grumpy Growlers class had to wear them walking into the class, but it wasn't something that we automatically reached for as like, hey, this dog is probably going to need a muzzle at some point, you know, or stuff comes up and really bad situations happen that you can't predict, and you're like, oh man, I wish they had been wearing a muzzle. But yeah, like it just wasn't something that I reached for early on in my career. And come 2018, 2019 in my career, I was like, the first meeting, I was like, hey, this is what this dog is doing. We're causing damage, or it's hurting himself, and we need to be able to progress training. We might not need the muzzle right now, but if your goals are that they have doggy friends, or they meet your cousin, or you know, you can walk down the street without them eating that hot dog that somebody dropped. Yeah, like maybe muzzle needs to be a part of the plan. And we would introduce that in the first session and be like, hey, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to work on other skills, but also let's work on this skill so that when we get there, we can use it and feel confident in our safety.
And it's like, I feel like early on in my career, like, you know, for better or for worse, I was taking on aggression cases very early on in my career. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but I was doing it. And it's like a lot of my clients' dogs already had really negative experiences with dogs because a lot of these dogs had to be forcefully muzzled at the vet, right? And like, obviously, we understand why the vet and the vet staff were doing that, but it's like, I wish back then I would have been like, let's do muzzle conditioning just like as a proactive measure before like they had all of these negative experiences at the vet or like other circumstances where they were being forcefully muzzled.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a trick. Yeah, my Moya, when I muzzle trained her, she hates putting on clothes. Absolutely hates it. Like the
Not for
collar
her.
comes out and she's like, "Oh gosh, we're going outside, but please don't touch me." And I'm like, "No, this really needs to go on." And you know, sometimes that just has to happen. So I knew that when the muzzle came out, it was going to be ideal. I did a lot of like trick training around sticking your head in things, and we also did a lot of cooperative care training. She actually is, she works with me at CSU and teaches a lot of the vet students about cooperative care. She had a lot of those skills built in that we just kind of put together with the muzzle, and she's like, "Oh, the muzzle's out. Let's go put it on." And so it's a completely different conditioned emotional response than when her collar comes out.
And I think something that, you know, I'm sure you tell this to your clients all the time too, but it's like dogs don't have stigmas about muzzles. If we teach them that it's this fun trick, then we just get to establish that right from the beginning, right? And that can save all of us a lot of heartache in the long run. Okay, so I want to talk about specifically you in your training career because you didn't always have a part of your business, right? Like you were literally just a dog behavior person, right? And you were supporting clients. And then, kind of out of necessity, you started making muzzles. Is that right?
Pretty much. And honestly, like, so dog training, I started at the Boulder Valley Humane Society, and I worked under some amazing mentors, like Lindsay Wood and Shelley Brower. And we had a blast working there. And so I had them as backup, and working at the shelter, we didn't get to say no to behavior cases. Like, we got what we got. So when we were getting hard cases, I was going to Lindsay and to Shelley, and you know, I had them as backup, which was so valuable. And then from there, I kind of went out on my own after I had my first child. So I have fur, no, I have fur babies, and then I have pink babies. And so I had my first child, and I kind of just made my own schedule and started doing training that way, taking behavior cases and then collaborating with veterinary behaviorists when needed, and also collaborating with other trainers in the area. Like, we have a really great network in
We
the
are
Denver,
so
Colorado
spoiled.
area.
We
We
are
are so
so
spoiled.
spoiled. Like I talk to other trainers and I'm like, you guys don't have like a network of trainers that you all like get together? They're like, no. I'm like, that's crazy. And I'm like so lucky. I just kind of got grandfathered into it when I started training too. Like it just existed. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Then in I started making muzzles in 2019, which was fortuitous, because we all know what happened in 2020. And given that I had small children, I wasn't about to, and my partner still worked, because his job is at the hospital and he was necessary. So I wasn't going to work from 5 until 9 in the afternoon when he got home, only to, do this passing back and forth thing forever and ever and ever. And lo and behold, when everybody stayed home with their dogs, they realized that they actually needed muzzles. And I actually also think that the stimulus checks also helped. Like, hey, I have this little extra money. I'm going to purchase this, this custom thing for my dog. And so that's where everything just kind of took off. And I've been doing that primarily for the last 4 years. I do a little bit of rattlesnake avoidance training using positive reinforcement. We have an online course. And then I do some workshops that I travel around for a little bit, not so much anymore. But the online course is really good. And I've seen a lot of dogs go through that because rattlesnake avoidance is a completely other topic.
Oh my God, I know. I remember doing a live workshop with you and oh God, her name is escaping me right now. It'll come to me. At Summit Dog.
Yeah, Amber.
Amber, yes.
Yeah,
Shout
Amber
out to
Kwan.
Amber. Yes. I want to talk more about some muzzle misconceptions first, because I think that while by and large, I feel like, especially like thanks to social media, there's been a huge tide shift in people's perceptions of muzzles and how they feel about that. But I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about muzzles. So I want to just first and foremost talk about circumstances in which muzzles maybe aren't appropriate first, because I think that, unfortunately, there is some misuse of muzzles also. So let's talk about circumstances where maybe muzzles are not exactly what we need, and then we can talk into the bridge into the vast world of where we do need muzzles.
Absolutely. So the biggest one that I get is that barking as a solution to stop their dog from barking. And it's unsafe. A lot of times people will, and separation anxiety specifically, because when dogs are left home alone and they're barking all the time, they just need their dog to stop and they can't do anything else other than keep their dog's mouth shut, which is super dangerous. And that is the biggest place where muzzles should not be used. And I do a fair bit of education on that. So when I have people reaching out to me and they're like, my dog's barking nonstop when I leave the house. And I'm like, I am not making you a muzzle. You
Right.
need to contact a separation anxiety expert. Like this is not where this is going. And then we talk about safety. Like the dogs need to pant to cool themselves down. They also need to be able to drink. So if they're being left home alone for extended periods of time, they need to have access to water, and if their mouth is shut, then they cannot have that access to water.
Yeah. Okay. And I think another big one that comes up a lot is dogs who are dog aggressive, just putting a muzzle on them and putting them into dangerous situations, like taking them to a dog park, for example. Like, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that.
No,
Right.
for many reasons.
Right. So, like, a muzzle doesn't mean that then you can just put your dangerous dog in dangerous situations.
Exactly. A muzzle, while it is like putting the safety on the gun, it does not mean that you should still wave it around. And it's not super beneficial to the for I, any of the dogs in that situation, right? Like the dog that's wearing the muzzle is stuck in a situation that they're obviously not comfortable in, and the dogs at the dog park aren't having a great time either. So
Right. And then also, I think it's really helpful to point out here that, like, you can't just slap a muzzle on a dog either, right? Like, emergency situations, yes, right? But, like, outside of that, there's so much time and energy that goes into teaching and conditioning the dog to be comfortable wearing the muzzle. It's not you just buy a muzzle, you put it on the dog, the end, right? Like, there is so much in between that needs to happen for the safety of the dog and for the safety of everyone around us too. So I just wanted to point out, can you think of any other circumstances where people might use muzzles where it's like, actually, no, I would not suggest that.
this is actually a current thing that is coming up a little bit for me. I've had two requests, but this one in case. Particular owner actually doesn't want their dog to drink water when they take it to the dog park. And it's for a medical reason, which is
Right.
fair. Like this particular dog will choke and get infections and pneumonia if it drinks water. So it's an extreme case. They have to drink special water. I don't know of any muzzles that would stop water from entering the muzzle without also stopping air from entering the muzzle, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Those muzzles need to have enough airflow for the dog to be able to breathe and cool down as well. So I think in that particular case, a muzzle isn't necessarily a great option to stop the dog from drinking water. Like situations need to be set up a little bit differently.
Yeah. And something else that also comes to mind is that like overwhelmed puppy parents, right? When like little puppies are
Yes.
constantly biting everything and putting teeth on, like, sorry, y'all, no, muzzle's not appropriate in that circumstance either, right? Like
Yep.
redirecting tons of appropriate outlets, lots of patience, like little teeny tiny puppies.
Naps.
Yeah. A lot of naps, probably just helping them calm down, can also be super helpful. Oh my
Exercise pens and crates and chewies and
Yeah, all of the options. All of the options. I think that th this is a good segue into all of the beautiful circumstances in which muzzles can be so helpful for so many dogs. I mean, I know we both could probably think of a bazillion, but do you want to like, talk about a few maybe particular cases or specific clients that muzzles have been game changers for them?
So dogs that have gone through training and are ready to expand their world because they are showing that they are comfortable in new situations and new environments, or potentially could be, but you want to make sure that they're extra safe. Wearing a muzzle as that extra barrier just to make sure that they don't make a bad decision. In particular, I had one dog that we were using two layers of safety between me and her, and we were at a point where I could feed the dog through the fence on a leash, and we decided to make the jump to me coming into the backyard. And I was like, okay, we'll just have her wear a muzzle. I didn't think that it was necessarily necessary. And then one of her big triggers went by the yard while I was in the yard, and I was trying to move away from it, and she was like, nope, I'm going to redirect onto you. And I was like, oh, okay, that was a good choice. Like,
That is
right?
why we use an extra level of safety.
Exactly, because she was on leash. We were in the backyard. We didn't think that, nope, bike went by. She was like, nope, I can't get to the bike. I'm going to get to you. I was like, okay, glad we made that choice. So, biting, obviously, that's a big one. Other ones that aren't quite so widely known, breed specific legislation. And I know in Denver, we just broke that a little bit. But Europe is now like really cracking down in the UK. And a lot of the big bully breeds are now required to wear muzzles 24/7 when they're in public. And it's devastating to
Oh.
these owners because the dogs are so lovely and now they have to wear their party hat so that they can go out and join the party. Like that's a big one. Legislation is,
Oh.
huge where these dogs are, they don't need muzzles, but they're required to wear them. So that's a reason that you might see a dog in a muzzle. Pica. So when dogs eat things that they shouldn't eat, I've had so many dogs that just grab sticks and start consuming them so that their owners can't take it away. And you're like, you're going to obstruct yourself, or rotten apples. So wearing a muzzle, so that they can, run around off leash and have a great time, but not have to worry about necessarily consuming something that they shouldn't or resource guarding something that they shouldn't have. Sports. Dog sports, lure coursing, keeping the animals from, redirecting or actually grabbing the bag at the end of the run. You'll see it also in like sighthound racing, which is pretty
Right.
common. Those dogs are really comfortable wearing muzzles because it's just part of their everyday life as a sign to others to stay away.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings me into like a lot of muzzles are like black or metal and kind of not very flashy or kind of scary looking. But a lot of the muzzles that I make are super bright and exciting, and they're very highly visible. And the reason that a lot of people go with the highly visible muzzles is one, it makes them look a lot more friendly, but two, it's a great visual for other people. If your dog's great, just walking down the street, as long as they don't have hands reaching towards their heads, a muzzle is a great, starter there. It's a nonverbal. You don't have to say anything. Most people see a dog in a muzzle and they're not just going to reach out and pet your dog. And if at the very least they should ask. And that also, leads me to those dogs off leash when you're hiking with your dog in a muzzle and somebody sees your dog in a muzzle, they're more likely to call their dog back a lot earlier than they would otherwise, shouting, I'm friendly, or I'm
Right.
friendly, my dog's friendly. And then you have a whole conversation about that.
Right. Yeah. And, I just want to give a shout out to all you beautiful people listening, because I know a lot of you listening, one, they have worked with me, two, they have gotten a custom muzzle from you. And it
I
is,
get a lot of your clients coming
yeah.
at custom muscles from me. Yeah.
And it's just expanded their world so much and made so many situations so much easier. And in my experience, the most difficult cases are dogs who are very particular about people and certain handling. And despite the guardian's best effort to advocate for them, people are so people-y, man. And they do not listen to guidance and they reach towards dogs. And it's like the peace of mind from a stranger danger guardian knowing that their dog is muzzled and it's they're not going to be at fault, even though people did stupid stuff. It's such a bummer, right? I was joking with some clients the other day. I was like, if I win $1 million, I'm going to put all of that money into educating the public about how to safely interact with dogs, right? Because
Oh man.
You would think that if I'm like, my dog will bite you, that would do something, but you wouldn't believe how many people are like, oh no, all dogs love me. Like, clearly you haven't been bit by a dog and it shows, right? Like, oh my.
Yep, absolutely. It was too funny. I was at a friend's house the other day, and a friend walked into our house, and he brought his girlfriend with him. And she bent down, she'd never been in this house before, bent down to pick up a little chihuahua. And he was like, no. And I was like, who picks up a dog that you don't know? Who does that?
But so many people do. So many
Right?
people do, right? And
Yeah.
I think, it's like the muzzles offer this level of peace of mind and safety that without it, these dogs wouldn't be able to be in so many situations, right? And a lot of the stranger danger cases that I work with, those dogs also have some challenges with isolation or being behind a barrier. So it's not just as simple as keep the dog in a different room or keep the dog behind a baby gate, right? So it's like having that muzzle can be so hugely freeing for so many dogs and so many guardians. And it's like, I feel like, I don't know, I would be curious to hear your perspective on this too, because in my experience, there are dogs that are more prone to reaching for biting. Because it's been a successful strategy for them in the past, for whatever reason, right? Like maybe it's lack of early socialization, maybe it's genetics, maybe it's the situations they've been in. But I think that those dogs being able to have, well, one, feeling comfortable wearing the muzzle first, but then having that muzzle to kind of stop them in those moments so that we can create these new ways for them to think about handling those situations can be hugely helpful also.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people report their dog being more confident when they're wearing the muzzle, and I suspect that a lot of it comes from the initial training with the muzzle because it puts them in that operant headspace, right? I'm wearing my muzzle, I'm in an operant headspace. Now I can think, and what might I do differently in this situation? And it just gives you a couple extra moments to throw in an extra cue, like, hey, I can see that you're feeling a little more uncomfortable. Maybe you run to your mat, or maybe you run and go to your place, your safe place, where nobody's going to come and pester you. And they start to learn, oh, when I leave, I can leave.
Right, right. And I think also it's like there are so many circumstances where when we do it right, the dog is able to choose all this vast behavior repertoire that they wouldn't have been able to choose it without the muzzle. And we wouldn't have been able to safely put them in those situations in the first place. Like I can think of dozens of behavior cases that I never would have put them in certain circumstances if it wasn't for the muzzle conditioning we did early on.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not that you're doing it like you're putting the muzzle on the dog and throwing them in the dog park. You're putting the muzzle on the dog because they're comfortable with it and they've learned this other repertoire of skills. And you're now at a point where you can take the baby gate away from between them and the new person, right? Because now you have an opportunity to practice a new situation. And it's essentially like a movable baby gate or a movable exercise pen. And it allows them a lot more freedom of movement, and it creates a more natural environment that is going to be more likely to be realistic moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I want to talk about dogs who struggle with certain forms of like care that they need. So going to the veterinarian or going to the groomer, right? And I think that one, groomers and veterinary staff and veterinarians, in my opinion, are super underappreciated. So I just want to give a shout out to all the groomers and the
Absolutely.
veterinary professionals of the world because the world would not go round without you all. And I don't think that you are paid enough or appreciated enough, right? But I think that a lot of the groomers and the vet techs and the vets of the world are forced into situations where they have to force a muzzle on the dog to get care done, right? For whatever reason. And when we, as the guardians, can realize that we can do all of this proactive work, walk our happy dogs with their muzzles on into the groomer or into the vet office, it just opens this possibility of one, we're asking less of our veterinarians and vet techs, which they probably need anyways, right? To be asked less of. And then our dogs are not having this shitty experience where they're being cornered in this like fabric muzzle that they can't breathe in very well to get routine things done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, the vets and the groomers are in a tight spot anyway, especially when the owners are uneducated on this, because the owners come in and they're like, well, I showed up and we need to get this thing done today. Please get it done today. The poor vets and groomers, they're like, no, really, like we should do some meds and some muzzle training and all this stuff. They know. And the owners are kind of pushing them into that situation. So oh man, my heart goes out to them. And I do a lot of education too with the vet students and talking to them about muzzle training and trying to make it a little bit more comfortable for them and trying to choose basket muzzles over cloth muzzles when they can. Yeah. And also about, proper muzzle fit and all that stuff. But sometimes they just have to get it done. And as an owner, if you know your dog's uncomfortable at the vet, getting your dog muzzle trained or as a vet, seeing a dog that's struggling and that the next fire muzzle, if you can have a store with a few stock muzzles in it and send that owner home with it with an instruction on how to like get their dog comfortable wearing it goes a long way. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I want to talk about muzzle conditioning. So I know a lot of you beautiful people listening have done a lot of muzzle conditioning and you know this, right? But maybe if you're new to the world of muzzles and you're not really sure, right? I want to just talk about muzzle conditioning, right? To start, because it's so funny because like a lot of my clients that I'm like, I think we should do muzzle conditioning. A lot of these dogs have no association with muzzles at all. And they are always flabbergasted how quickly we can teach the dog to comfortably wear the muzzle. They're like, the dog was comfortable wearing it in a week. I was like, I know, it's crazy, right? Like, you wouldn't think that we could teach them that, right? And obviously, that's, not all dogs are like that. And if dogs have negative associations or particularly sensitive to things, it can take longer than that. But like, I want to hear your perspective on this because you have supported a lot of people in muzzle conditioning.
Absolutely. So my main like go-to is to actually make it super easy for the owner too, because I think one of the biggest blockages to teaching the dogs new behaviors is getting the owner on board and actually doing it. So what I tell my owners to do is I tell them to store their muzzle in their food bin and to create a way to prop the muzzle up in their food bowl so that the dog can just eat their food from the muzzle and do that for a few days. Like you have to do absolutely nothing other than feed your dog what you're doing anyway.
Right.
Done. Okay. Super easy. And not only that, but now the muzzle smells like food. And they're like super excited about sticking their head in. And I will, side note, put a little disclaimer on there. There are some extreme cases where dogs will resource guard their muzzle and you may not be able to get it off, but that is like one in a million,
Very
hopefully.
rare, but
Very,
not
very rare.
impossible. Yeah.
I think it was, yeah, I have not personally seen it. I have seen it presented at a conference. So now your muzzle smells like food. Your dog's super interested in it. They're getting comfortable sticking their head in the muzzle and kind of moving their head around in the muzzle so the muzzle isn't just like stuck in one spot. And then I move to holding the muzzle in the hand and feeding treats through it, and holding the muzzle in the hand and maybe touching the dog's neck and feeding them treats, and just getting them used to you messing around with the muzzle and getting them used to sticking their head in the muzzle. It's like it's they pick it up so fast. And from there, what I generally do is then teach the dog to follow the muzzle. So I will move the muzzle forward and make sure that the dog can keep their nose in the muzzle, right? And feeding them for that, and then strapping it on, feeding them a few treats. Maybe I feed them in different locations, and then we take the muzzle off. And they just start to get used to, oh, this thing's on my head and it moves around, and nothing, the world hasn't ended, and good things still happen. And in this whole process, the owner is also learning how to deliver treats through the muzzle, because
It's a
as much
skill
as,
set in and of itself.
oh
Oh my
man,
gosh.
as much as I want to create a muzzle that you can just like deliver treats through, and like there's a magic door that opens and makes it perfectly easy, delivering treats through a muzzle is hard. And it doesn't matter how big the treat hole is, it is hard.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, I'm sure everyone listening who has been muzzle training and has to do this is just chuckling. Like, yeah. So if you thought it was just you, it's not just you. It's all of us, right? And the dog,
Everybody.
right? It's like, it's kind of that teamwork of like the dog realizing, like, cool, if my head is propped up at this angle, I will get it faster.
Exactly. And if you've switched from one brand to another, the treat hole or the way that you deliver those treats might differ. So if they're used to wearing one muzzle and you're used to delivering treats through that one muzzle, it might be different when you switch to a different brand.
Well, and I love Amy so much to just like starting with feeding them their normal meals in the muzzle, right? And like I wholeheartedly agree. It's like I'm always looking at like super simple context cues for the owners to remember to do it first and foremost. And then second, it's just like an easy thing that they're gonna do every day anyways, right? Because in my experience, if you can be consistent and do little training sessions every day with the muzzle, right? Like, obviously, there are exceptions with dogs with negative associations and stuff like that, but like, it really goes pretty fast, right? Right. And I think, it's one of those things too, Amy, that like, because everyone, Amy is making me a custom muzzle for Waylon right now, right? Like, I got Waylon and I got him as a little puppy and he came from a responsible breeder. And I was thinking to myself, like, this dog will never have to wear a muzzle. You know what I mean? Because I tell myself these things. And then, as many of the listeners already know, there were a couple circumstances where Waylon used his teeth. And I was like, damn, okay. Like, all right. You do need to use a muzzle under the right conditions. And I think it's one of those things too that like, even if your dog is not a bite risk, I think still just like, for funsies, proactively training the muzzle, even just as a trick, you never know. You never know, right? Like, what if there's that emergency situation and it's just going to be safer for everyone to wear the muzzle? Like, if we could just teach all of these young puppies, like, yeah, sometimes you stick your face into a little basket, you get cookies, and sometimes you wear it around. Like, what a safer world it could be for so many of us.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. So, I want to talk about your muzzles specifically. So the world of muzzles is pretty vast these days. It's pretty incredible to see like the market of muzzles expand so drastically because like, I don't know, I feel like it wasn't that long ago that like Baskerville was like, and Leonberger were like the only two brands that made muzzles.
And actually, so Chapo is the big like parent company to has a bunch of those metal muzzles that you see around, and there are like multiple brands that purchase those metal baskets and then outfit them and sell them as their own. So most of those are the same muzzles, all sold just on different under different names. Baskerville is still kind of like my band-aid go-to for like, hey, we got to get this dog in a muzzle ASAP or get them started with training. They're cheap, they're easy, they might not be the most secure, but at least it'll get you through, right? And I mean, there are lots of other brands out there, a lot more custom muzzle companies out there than when I started, which is so cool to see like all the people coming up with different ingenious ideas that they want to start putting on their muzzles. I particularly have two different models. I have my Biothane model, which is kind of like a faux leather strappy model. I think I have like 32 different color straps that we can use, which is really cool. And then recently I launched a reinforced front on those muzzles because they are strappy, they're leather, they're flexible. And for dogs that have significant bite force behind them, like the larger dogs, dogs that have intent to injure, or dogs that might be in situations where they've caused damage in the past. I don't want them in a biothane muzzle because it essentially turns into like an oven mitt, right?
Right.
Like they can fold it right into their mouth and pick up whatever, or, you know, put their teeth through whatever. If you have a significant bite risk, you don't want a biothane muzzle. But I did start reinforcing the front on a lot of those muzzles, which means that there are two metal bars that go up the very front. So if the dog bites from a frontal angle, the muzzle isn't going to flex into their mouth. Additionally, for those dogs that pick up items and kind of, or maybe they wrestle really enthusiastically with their friends and they're wearing a muzzle, their teeth aren't tearing up the inside of the muzzle because those bars are keeping it from bending and folding, and also, you know, as like an extra barrier to create some longevity with those biothane muzzles. And then my vinyl muzzle, which is like a sheet vinyl with holes punched into it, and it's folded to the molded and folded into the shape of the dog's face, is a lot more secure. So it doesn't fold and bend the way that the biothane does, and it provides a much thicker barrier between the dog's mouth and everything else on the outside. So those are my two models. While I don't consider either of them 100% bite proof, I do trust the vinyl to prevent the vast majority of bites.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a really good point, Amy, that I think we should clarify on just a little bit, right? Is that dogs who will use their teeth and dogs who will bite, that's also a spectrum, right? Because there are some dogs who might use their mouth very, very sparingly. They might like bite once in a blue moon, right? And that's a circumstance where like a biothane muzzle is totally appropriate. Right. But
Absolutely.
what Amy is talking about here with like dogs with like an intent to cause harm, or dogs with a like a significant bite history that have done major damage, right? Like that is a circumstance where a dog just needs a sturdier muzzle, because if push comes to shove, right, the dog is not just gonna do like one bite and back off, right? It's likely that they will bite and continue to pursue. And that's what we need, just like a little bit more safety there.
Exactly. Yep.
Right. Okay. So, Amy, I want to talk about some of the custom muzzles you have built and created for dogs, because I think that, like you're saying, right, like the Baskerville or like, you know, the cheap Amazon brand, if your dog has to wear the muzzle like once a year, that might be appropriate. You know what I mean? Like, if it fits the dog's muzzle, they have some pant room, like, that's probably good. But I think for a lot of the dogs that need to wear muzzles more regularly, the, like, you know, just off the line muzzles you can buy just aren't really comfortable or sustainable for like long durations of time.
Yeah, exactly. And my goal when creating these muzzles is to create a muzzle that a dog can wear for hours at a time and still be comfortable. Because the muzzles should have enough space for the dog to pant comfortably, not necessarily need yawn space. I know there's a lot of drama about that, but they need to be able to pant comfortably and unrestricted. Right. So they need to be able to dispel the heat that they're experiencing throughout the day, or, you know, stress, so that they're making sure that they are getting enough oxygen to their body. If they're in a vest situation that they had, you want to make sure that they are able to remain comfortable and safe. So we want to make sure that they have plenty of pant space. We want to make sure that the nose length is the length of their nose. I want to make sure that it's not necessarily going into their eyes and it's not necessarily rubbing the end of their nose. And that is a really hard target to hit because oftentimes when the muzzle is pushing on the end of their nose, it means that the strap that's right in front of their eyes goes into their eyes just a little bit while they're taking treats or sniffing the ground or something like that. Work with those length issues to make sure that it's fitting their particular dog's needs. So if their dog tends to spend a lot of time like snuffling around in the ground, I might make that muzzle like a quarter inch shorter than I normally want it to be to make sure that it's not pestering their eyes, and they're going to have to adjust it so that it falls a little bit farther off their nose, so that it's not rubbing the end of their nose too. Yeah, so those are like the two big considerations that I take into account when I'm making muzzles.
Right. So that the dog can pant appropriately and that it's not rubbing or like running into their eyes. Yeah. And that's something I see a lot, right? Is like I see the muzzle like shoving into the dog's eyes. And I'm like, and obviously, like everyone, if you are doing your best and you can only afford the muzzle that you have, that is okay, right? But
Absolutely.
I think a lot of my clients are more than willing to pay a little bit of extra money for that custom muzzle because it's like, if your dog needs to wear a muzzle for whatever safety precaution almost daily, of course it's worth the money to invest in a muzzle that they can wear safely, right? And I think that, there's so many odd face shapes in dogs, let's be honest.
There are. And I mean, you can't, there isn't necessarily a standard size for every dog out there. Like, there just isn't. I have hundreds of templates for my vinyl muzzles because every dog is just a little bit different and we want to make sure that it fits really well. And that said, like, all of the measurements, when I'm taking orders, I'm getting photos of these measurements so that I can confirm exactly how they were taken. Because sometimes people look at the measuring tape and they accidentally measured from the dog's forehead to the end of their nose instead of in front of their eyes to the end of their nose. And I just make that adjustment. And you know what? If the muzzle shows up and it doesn't necessarily fit, I am working with clients to make sure that it does fit. They don't necessarily have to like just trash that muzzle and buy a complete new one. We have a muzzle modification fee. So if the measurements weren't done right and we weren't able to check them 100%, because sometimes clients can't get photos of their dogs for safety reasons, or they have an 11-month-old puppy that just doesn't stand still and they live alone and they can't get photos, and fine, okay. So we have a measurement, or sorry, a muzzle modification fee. And so for much, much less than a full muzzle, I will, completely make a new muzzle, send that out to them. They bring the original. We make sure that they're in a muzzle that's going to fit for them.
Yeah, and I can think of a specific client, a little cattle dog named River. You may remember the muzzle. It was like blue and turquoise. It's like we got it and it didn't fit. And she was like, dang it, I don't know what to do. I was like, just email Amy. She wants it to fit. Just
I
email
want it
her.
to fit.
Right, exactly. And you were able to, make it fit and now it fits him really, really well. Right. So
Perfect. Yeah.
yeah. And something else that I really love about the Biothane muzzles is that they're just lighter weight. And sometimes I feel like just the weight of the muzzle is really what's aversive to the dog, not actually wearing the muzzle, So it's like another cool thing about the Biothane for these dogs that maybe have a bite history, but maybe not the like intent to harm degree. That I love that it's just a little bit lighter weight and a little bit easier to move around, right? I can think of a particular client, they worked their asses off with the Baskerville and it was going okay. The dog was tolerating it. And I was like, I think maybe a custom muzzle, and they got the Biothane muzzle, and they sent me this video of the dog parading around on their walk, and I was like, yeah, they're much happier. It just fits better. Of course it does, right? Like when we think about us, if we're wearing something that's uncomfortable and we switch to something that's more comfortable, it's incredible the impact that has on our behavior, right?
You get a pair of sneakers and you got shin splints and you change your sneakers and all of a sudden you can run. Like, yeah, of course.
Right,
The other
right.
thing about the Biothane is that because of the flexibility, like it flexes with the dog's face, so it's not so rigid and hard and pokey. So yeah,
Oh my
of
God.
course, when it fits right, it's going to feel better.
Oh my God. And all the color combinations. I'm sorry, as someone who really loves bright, colorful things, that is also a big selling point for me.
I think, oh gosh, I think the muzzle up movement did a very non-scientific survey at one point, and they're like, what would make you want to wear a muzzle, or what would, what destigmatizes the muzzle most for you? And they're like, colors. Of course, colors, And there's lots of stuff you can do with stock muzzles to make them more friendly. I have people that will occasionally come to me with like their metal basket muzzles, and they'll be like, hey, can you put Biothane on this and like swap out all that black leather? Heck yes, I can. So,
Yes, yes. And I also love the functionality also for the human end because some of my clients struggle with the like clasp and the clip, right? And you're able to customize that so that like if a guardian has some mobility stuff, we can also make it easier for the guardian to get the muzzle on and off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, as an also side note, you can also bedazzle them, which I just think is the greatest.
Yep, we got lots of rhinestones and
We can make
gems
them
and stars
fancy.
and hearts and yeah. I don't know if you can actually see them when they're on the dogs, but it makes you feel a little better.
Yes, it does. Oh my God. Okay, Amy, any final thoughts on muzzles? Muzzle training, muzzle stigmas, making muzzles.
Oh man, I think that's a lot. Yeah.
Amazing.
For
Okay,
sure.
so Amy, if someone wanted to order a custom muzzle, tell them how they could do that.
Yep, so I have my website. It's trust-your-dog.com. You can pick your model on there. I do also have standard sizes and a couple of muzzles. So if the muzzle doesn't fit and gets returned, that muzzle gets relisted as a pre-made, ready-to-ship muzzle. So there are a variety of muzzle sizes available on there. But you can also order your custom muzzle with your own dog's measurements and kind of go through the whole process. There are instructions on the website. I'm actually next Monday doing a like professional video on how to measure and troubleshoot and get that up on the website to make it a little bit easier and more self-explanatory as far as measuring goes. But if you're still like concerned about getting the measurements right and making sure everything looks good. We do also offer Zoom consults with myself or Carissa, who is another dog trainer who lives in Colorado, and she's been helping me out tremendously in the office and all that great stuff. She's amazing.
Shout out
And
to
then, yeah, Carissa's
Carissa.
amazing. Yeah, if you order a muzzle, we are more than happy to help you walk through it. You get your muzzle, it doesn't fit, just let us know. We can help you adjust it. We might hop on Zoom with you and walk you through that whole process. You would be, well, I don't know, maybe you're not, but I am amazed at how many people don't know what a screwdriver is. So, which is sometimes required when adjusting your muzzle to fit your dog at home. So,
Right, yes. So there's all the options for them to support you. And then everyone who was listening who has already ordered a custom muzzle from Amy, I want to encourage you to just take some cute photos or videos and tag Amy on the gram, right? Just because I think when people start to see like, dang, I can get my dog a cute, colorful muzzle. I also find that that creates a little bit more motivation for people to stick with their muzzle training and use it in appropriate settings too. You know, like I think if you have a rainbow muzzle, you're probably going to be more motivated to work with it than if you have just like a boring brown one. I mean, I would be. Maybe I'm speaking about myself, but I think a lot of people feel the same way. Oh my God. And everyone, will include a link to that in the show notes so that you can find it. And then when I get Waylam's custom muzzle, I'm going to do just a little like retraining and I'll be sure to post on that too. And then I know, Amy, you have tons of content on your website for muzzle conditioning. I have plenty of videos. So if you need help with muzzle training, there's so many amazing free resources to support you in your journey.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you need help with your dog's behavior, you can learn more about our training services at agoodfeelingdogtraining.com. We post training inspiration and training tips almost daily over on the Instagram at agoodfeeling_NCO. If you like this podcast, we would be so grateful if you could share it with a friend or family member who could benefit from all of the information. It's been a total delight. We love this podcast so much. And thank you so much for listening to Disorderly Dogs.